is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history. In 1801, after a tie in the Electoral College and 35 indecisive votes in the House of Representatives, Thomas Jefferson officially becomes the third president of the United States, beating out his rival Aaron Burr, who even Jefferson's political opposite, Alexander Hamilton, felt was unfit to hold high office. Burr became Jefferson's vice president. The now famous duel between Hamilton and Burr occurred a few years later. In 1904, Puccini's opera Madame Butterfly premieres at the world-famous La Scala Theater in Milan and is immediately panned by the critics. Puccini rewrote the opera, and it was subsequently released to much acclaim, becoming, along with Tosca, one of his most beloved operas of all time. And in 1966, Brian Wilson, the creative genius behind The Beach Boys, rolls Take One on what would become one of the most popular tunes of the 1960s, Good Vibrations. Wilson assembled a group of classical and rock musicians together with a wide variety of instruments and associated sound effects in constructing a wall of sound with tracks layered over each other in a complex and creative mix. Good Vibrations was an instant number one hit and proof of Wilson's superb songwriting talents. It is now considered one of the greatest songs of its era. Religious persecution historically has caused millions of people around the world to seek a better, friendlier place to live. In the 17th century, there were many dissenters in Great Britain who disagreed with the policies of the Church of England. After having a vision in which he claimed to have experienced the presence of Jesus Christ, George Fox began preaching a direct involvement of each person with the deity, without the use of ordained clergy. His actions were viewed as highly controversial, and in 1650, Fox was brought before magistrates on the charge of blasphemy. In his autobiography, Fox tells of how he directed the magistrates to tremble at the word of the Lord. The term Quaker was later used to describe him and his followers, also known as the Religious Society of Friends. Quakers are strongly dedicated to nonviolence. Yet some of them actually took up arms and fought in local militias during the Revolutionary War. Others later fought to support the Union in the Civil War. The group has gone through many changes since Fox started sharing his beliefs, and today Quakers live throughout the Philadelphia and Chester County area. Today we'll be speaking with Chris Densmore, the curator of the Friends Historical Library at Swarthmore College, a well-known and highly respected institution with Quaker roots. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gene. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for being here. You're curator of the Friends Historical Library at Swarthmore. Just tell us a little bit about the college and how the Friends Library actually came about.
Well, the college was chartered in 1864. Was organized by members of the Society of Friends from New York, Philadelphia, and Baltimore yearly meetings as a place where Quaker children can be educated. And then we came home. The college actually opened in 1869. That's when the first classes came in. We had the faculty. And Friends Historical Library was founded 2 years later. So we've been around since 1871.
Okay, and how long have you actually been the curator of the library there?
I've been curator of Friends Historical Library since January of 2001.
Okay, so about 15 years. What are your main responsibilities there as curator? What do you get directly involved with adding books and artifacts to the collection?
Yeah, you could describe my work as being the director. I'm the person supposedly in charge. And so one of the decisions we make is what sorts of things we want to add to the collection. What should we go after? Where should we put our emphases? Some of that's hands-on work, and a lot of it's directing my very able staff.
Mm-hmm. Now, William Penn may be one of the best-known Quakers, at least here in America. The land grant he received established the colony of Pennsylvania. How is Penn viewed by subsequent generations of Quakers? I mean, is there much literature or commentary on the beginnings that he started here in North America?
Well, Penn has other claims to fame. One is the Penn Mead trial in England around 1670, where he was arrested for preaching on the street, and the jury refused to indict him, and the judge threatened the jury with fines and imprisonment, but they held true, and this is the sort of the basis of the independence of juries. He also is known for good relations with Native Americans, the Lenape. Mm-hmm. He wrote a very wonderful set of aphorisms and sayings called Fruits of Solitude, which is well worth reading. Short, pithy comments on life and responsibilities and just being a good person.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's well-respected in this area. You know, the people who followed him, there were just literally tens of thousands of Quakers who came over from England and really chose this area as one of the best places to settle. Does your library have much on the early Quakers, some of the original people that came over, let's say, late 1600s, early 1700s?
Yeah. Well, we're the depository for the records of New York Yearly Meeting, which goes back to Yearly Meeting in 1694, but the earliest meetings are about 1657. And Baltimore Yearly Meeting, which is the same thing, that they were founded in the 1650s. Mm-hmm. And we have records from the beginning. Pennsylvania is kind of late because they're not... the big migration to Pennsylvania is only the 1680s.
Mm-hmm. So the records actually do go back quite a bit further than that. I think Quakers were pretty well known for being successful farmers and merchants. I think many of them ran mills. Tell us a little bit about their activities around the Philadelphia area in terms of farming or running mills and other establishments.
Well, in Philadelphia, we have Quaker merchants, and Quakers were noted for honest business and honest weights, not trying to bargain but have fixed prices on things. Lots of Quaker farmers around here, but also some of these farmers were also botanists and naturalists like Humphrey Marshall and John Bartram in Philadelphia, that was a Quaker family, so you get Quakers involved not only in commerce, business, and agriculture, but also in the Berkeley and the sciences.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned Humphrey Marshall. For our listeners not from this area, he lived just to the north of where I live in Kennett Square, west-southwest of Philadelphia, and there's a town called Marshallton, which is actually related to him and his home there. He was one of the best-known botanists in the early colonies. In fact, I believe he grew different plants and trees, some of which ended up in the collections of some of the founding fathers, like Benjamin Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he was also in correspondence with leading botanists in England, some of whom were also Quakers.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the standard book on rose culture was written by a Quaker, and the standard book on fruit culture was written by a Quaker, and they added to the Genesee farmer and the Olympic cultivator. Just a lot of interest. And this got into scientific agriculture and scientific observation and a lot of women were involved in this as well.
Mm-hmm. I know that in my research I found that Quakers generally align themselves with four different what you call testimonies, and I guess the most important one is the peace testimony. Quakers are known for their abhorrence of violence. They're strongly against war and violence in just about any form. Yet some of the Quakers actually fought in local militias during the Revolutionary War. Tell us a little bit about that. I know there's some questions about how actively they were engaged and,
well,
and how much they fought, et cetera. What can you say about that?
Well, Gene, I'm going to totally dispute that. You know, I've looked through the meeting records around here, and Quakers were very, very serious about their anti-war testimony at this time, even doing things like one person was disciplined by his meeting for allowing his apprentice to attend a military muster. Somebody else was in trouble for announcing meetings of the local government. Now, this was very, very strict, and you couldn't take money if people came in to seize your crops because that was supplying war goods. And anybody that did in the slightest, as soon as the meeting heard about it, they would send around a committee and say, you know, friend, what are you doing? We hear that you have been learning the art of war. And if that person didn't immediately stop and say, oh, gee, I'm sorry, I was just carried away, and make profuse apologies, they were disowned.
Right.
So
I guess the point is that some Quakers, did believe in supporting the revolutionary government, and they probably knew in advance they'd be disowned. But nonetheless, some, at least a handful, I think, perhaps hundreds, did take up arms. Now, I guess you could say that, well, at that point they were no longer Quakers. But,
or soon not to be.
Yeah. But nonetheless, in my readings, I have, and nowhere near as extensive as yours, of course, but I have seen that many, many Quakers were on the lists of the Chester County Militia. Now, I know that the comeback to that is, well, they listed people on the rolls of the militia just because they were living, breathing human beings. But presumably some of them actually did pick up arms and fight. So I guess they were what you would call former Quakers. they were all shunned or forced out of their meetings if they did that.
Well, they wouldn't. Shunning is not a Quaker procedure. Some of the Anabaptist groups, like the Mennonites, the more conservative ones, do shunning. That's, you know, you don't even talk to the person who's been misbehaving.
I'm with you. Yeah. So they didn't shun them in that way, but they did try to force them out of their meetings. Is that it?
Well, if you were to be disowned from a meeting, meant that you were not behaving in a way that Quakers should behave.
Right.
And so you were not in unity with the meeting.
So you were forced out, in effect.
Well, but you could continue to attend meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You could sit there. It didn't affect your social relationships or your family relationships. And you know, there were some people that would continue to attend meeting for years, then maybe sometime later would say, oh, well, gee, you know, 20 years ago I did this, and now that I think of it, maybe I should have done that.
Okay. Well, that sounds much in line with what I've read. We're about to take a brief break, but listeners, stay with us. We'll be back after a commercial break with Chris Densmore talking about local Quakers during the American Revolution.
Radio PA's Ask the Governor program brings you access to Pennsylvania's governor like you've never had before. You can send your questions and comments to Governor Tom Wolf now by going to PAMatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You could be part of our next edition of Ask the Governor.
School funding, investment in schools is really important to me. My goal is to try to provide for a fairer tax system for everybody. I said, send me a full year budget, a real budget, and I'll let it pass. We need to get to work to get this budget done.
You can also listen to Ask the Governor and watch exclusive video clips from the show on PAMatters.com.
This is Governor Tom Wolf. We'll talk about the issues that affect you on Ask the Governor. You can submit your question or comment today by visiting pamatters.com.
Ask the Governor is a production of Radio PA and pamatters.com in association with TFM Advertising.
Are you tired of looking up at that old, streaky, stained, tired, ugly roof? Tired of that ugly roof taking away from your home's curb appeal? G.P. Martini Roofing wants to solve your curb appeal woes with a new roof built with Atlas Pristine Shingles featuring Scotchgard Protector from 3M, the only shingle with a lifetime limited warranty against algae, streaks, and stains. G.P. Martini's crews are highly trained professional installers of asphalt shingle roofs, and now with the power of Atlas Shingles and Scotchgard Protector from 3M, G.P. Martini will install a roof that will provide the lasting color you choose for as long as you're in your home. Let G.P. Martini Roofing have a look at that nagging leak, or just call to consult about upgrading the look for your prized investment. Call them today, 610-873-1696. Whether your need is residential or commercial, G.P. Martini Roofing has the expertise in-house to solve your problem, or to simply make your home or office look its best. 610-873-1696. That's the number to call. 610-873-1696. And one of those G.P. Martini trucks will be on its way to you.
WCHE 1520 AM, bringing you all things Chester County from our palatial studios on West Gay Street in Uptown Westchester, the talk of Chester County. If you don't believe it, just ask your neighbor. They listen.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. We're talking with Christopher Densmore, the curator and education director for the Friends Historical Library in Swarthmore College, just outside of Philadelphia. Chris, we've been discussing how some Quakers were involved in picking up arms and fighting in local militias. I guess we call them now former Quakers. During the Revolutionary War, the biggest conflict, I guess, is about 80 years later, during the Civil War, and many Quakers were very strongly against both the war and slavery. And the name Underground Railroad is now familiar to us. It's a term that developed to describe the transport and hiding of slaves in friendly homes by people who abhorred slavery. Many of them were Quakers. Could you talk about perhaps some of the more prominent local conductors on this underground, unseen railroad?
Well, I have to start by saying that a lot of areas in this country, people have Underground Railroad stories, but they're either not true or refer to a very, very small number of people. In Chester County, we have dozens of houses that are proven Underground Railroad sites. And we have a lot of local people, the Mendenhalls and Darlingtons and Coxes, who were active for many, many years, a lifetime, and oftentimes, their children after them would also be active. The one who's probably the best known is Thomas Garrett from Wilmington, Delaware, who aided something like 5,000 fugitives over a period of about 40 years to escape from slavery. Even though he's not properly in Chester County or Pennsylvania, Wilmington is only a few miles line.
Right.
And so he was in contact with the people in Pennsylvania that were running the Underground Railroad here.
Yeah, I guess people who know the suburbs of Philadelphia may have heard of a road called Garrett Road. Thomas Garrett, that was named after Thomas Garrett. He actually has a house on Garrett Road in Drexel Hill, where I believe he lived for a while. And I've been to some of these Underground Railroad stops. For our listeners who are maybe coming from around the region who don't know the Chester County area, the Kennett Square and Chester County region in particular was a hotbed of abolitionist activity and had many spots on the Underground Railroad. You mentioned the Mendenhalls. People who know this area probably heard of the Mendenhall Inn. There was also a man named Eusebius Barnard. His house has an historical marker. The Cox family, as you mentioned, quite well known. Thomas Garrett, probably one of the more notorious ones, he actually went on trial for his activities. Tell us a little bit about that. Are you familiar with that event?
Yeah, he got caught once with another Quaker named John Hunn, who lived further down in Delaware, for aiding a family to escape Actually, the Charger looked a little trumped up. I mean, he was doing that all the time, but this one seems rather thin, but they caught him at it. And I think he was fined something like $7,000, which was an enormous sum of money at the time, and basically said, well, I regard this as payment in full for my future actions, because I have no intention of obeying the law where slavery is concerned. Supposedly Harriet Beecher Stowe used Thomas Garrett as the model for some of her characters in Uncle Tom's Cabin.
And that was one of the best-selling books of all time in America. In fact, I believe it sold something like 300,000 copies in just a few years after its publication. Mm. Very well-known book. I had heard that at Garrett's trial, one of the people who, one of the jurors who voted for him to be convicted and sentenced, actually came up to him afterwards and thanked him for his activity. That may be apocryphal, but I guess he gave a testimony in his closing statement that he believed so strongly in what he was doing that at least one person went up and thought very highly of him.
Mm-hmm.
The Quakers are known to be very strongly attached to their beliefs. Again, the testimony against violence. Some of them were ardent abolitionists, and you and I have talked about this. Some of those Quakers, maybe just a handful, were actually involved in activities which came to violence. So they were perplexed by this quandary. Tell us a little bit about that, and maybe about some of the local Quakers, what we call the Longwood Progressive Friends.
Yeah, well, I would say that all Quakers were abolitionists. I mean, that was the position that Quakers had adopted in the 1750s. What they disagreed on was on tactics. Some of the Garrison abolitionists in the 1830s were very much in your face and denouncing people who weren't 100% pure on the anti-slavery cause. And other people thought, gee, really, that's not the way to get through to people, to tell them that they're bad and evil, and why don't you just make the conversation about slavery rather than about personalities. And violence is a problem. One of the reasons Quakers turned against slavery, because slavery did exist among the Society of Friends in some measure, in the early years, but they recognized that the system that was created by violence, somebody went to Africa and bought kidnapped people that were probably kidnapped through wars, and if you wanted to keep slavery alive, you needed to have militias and people with guns who would be willing to commit violence if there were uprisings.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just an inherently violent situation. So you get some very difficult decisions to make. There's a story told, I think, of Grace Ann Lewis's father. They had a fugitive slave living with them up near, Kimberton, that area. And the slave catcher caught up with him, and the guy had been working in the woodyard, had a big axe, and he turns to the Quaker and says, shall I strike? And the Quaker says no, because that would be involving himself in violence. But then the poor guy gets taken away to be returned to slavery. That was those kinds of things were very, very difficult decisions to make.
It's a very challenging situation for Quakers back then, and even today, I would guess, in terms of drawing the line between what even verges on participation in a violent activity and what is blatantly a violent activity. There was something called the Christiana Riot.
Right.
Where I think a few people were killed, including one or two slave owners. Christiana is not too far from a little town called Gap, PA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in western Chester County, northwestern Chester County.
Well, it's actually the border of Lancaster.
Yeah, and it is It's a well-known incident, and when those people went to trial, Thaddeus Stevens, the well-known anti-slavery advocate, was their legal defense attorney. So a lot of events have been involved with violence, some actual killings, where Quakers and anti-slavery sympathizers were actually, you know, did actually have a direct hand. Now, that is a big quandary for Quakers. And I think that was part of the quandary with along with Progressive Friends. Now, for our listeners who haven't been there, the Chester County Visitor Center down near Kennett Square is actually in the same building where the Longwood Progressive Friends met. And several well-known personalities actually visited that place, including Thomas Garrett, William Lloyd Garrison, and others back in the 1850s, 1860s. And that's, the building is still there. It is now the visitor center. But it's it used to be a showcase for Underground Railroad and Quaker activities. Tell us a little bit about the Progressive Friends. What do you know about their background and what they accomplished?
Well, they come out of a controversy that had been brewing really from the 1830s onward about how much Quakers should be involved in secular activities with non-Quakers. And some people, even people who were very, very active in the Underground Railroad, didn't think that Quakers should be, you know, hobnobbing with Methodists and Presbyterians and that sort of thing, or singing hymns. And also questions about the inherent violence of some of the people in the anti-slavery movement. You know, what do you do about somebody like John Brown? Mm-hmm. But anyway, in Chester County, this had been bubbling for a while. Then it comes to a head in 1851 when there's actually a split in Marlborough meeting near Unionville. And the ones who were much more interested in being actively engaged in anti-slavery eventually in 1853 founded something called the Longwood, the Pennsylvania Yearly Meeting of Progressive Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Longwood because that was the name of the location where they built their meeting house.
Right, and for listeners, it is related and just down the street from Longwood Gardens, the world-renowned gardens. We only have a minute left, so you gave us a great summary of the of their beginnings. For anyone who visits the Chester County area, you may not know that there are several sites on the Underground Railroad, and Chris has been linked and involved with the Kennett Underground Railroad Center. Maybe you could just, in you know, maybe 30 seconds or less, just tell us a little bit about the Kennett Underground Railroad Center.
Good deal. The Kennett Underground Railroad Center has bus tours of local Underground Railroad sites. You know, look up the web page. Tries to do educational activities and lectures. And currently, we're looking for a new home so we can display some of the artifacts that we have. It's a great history that other people just don't have, and we've got it right here.
That is great. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. Tune in next Wednesday, February 24th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be talking with Heather Reifer of Historic Sugartown. Thank you all for joining us for Living History.